We're recording today on the lands of the Yagara people, and we acknowledge the traditional elders here, past and present. Hello everyone, I'm Andrea and I'm a former registered nurse and midwife. Welcome to Beyond the Rona.
Hi, and I'm Tim. I'm a digital marketer and small business owner. And here on Beyond the Rona, we're on a journey to find out what our community members think are the big problems and big solutions as we emerge from the pandemic.
Today, we're talking to Nicole Thompson, who is a former, a current registered nurse and midwife. Is that right? Yeah, still. She's had over 30 years experience as a registered nurse and 20 years experience as a midwife. She's worked in Australia and the USA. She's a current candidate for Right, and representing, you know, the Scenic Rim, which is a rural and regional area of Queensland. So we thought that today we'd get the opinion of Nicole to see, you know, what are some of the issues out there in rural and regional Queensland. We think that this is a really valuable, a valuable insight to gain of what's happening out there. Welcome to Beyond the Rona, Nicole. It's really good to have you.
Oh, thanks for having me.
That's okay. So can you tell us, now you live at Tambourine Mountain. You were telling us a few of the issues that are happening on Tambourine Mountain at the moment. Can you tell us what are the main issues that the people of the community are facing this election?
Look, Tambourine Mountain is a part of Wright, and Wright actually covers about 7,500 kilometres. So it's a huge area, and most of it is agricultural area. Tambourine Mountain's a little bit different in that we are definitely rural, but we're also big on tourism. We're a very small community of about 7,000 people, and so it's a restricted area being on top of a mountain. So we're not on water and we're not on sewerage mains, so we're very conscious of keeping our environment healthy and not overdeveloped.
It's really beautiful up there, isn't it? A lot of people, you said, live off grid, which is like kind of idyllic. You know, people really want to live that lifestyle these days. They want to live in this kind of, it's kind of rainforesty, and, you know, they want to have their own solar and their own, you know, yeah, they want to live that lifestyle. But at the same time, you've got, you were telling me, these commercial developers that are coming in and, you know, overdeveloping the area, and then you've got these people, commercial people who are coming and taking everybody's water and using it for other purposes. So people are being left without their water supply.
Yeah, look, we're on water tank up here, so we are also dependent on water mining, but for our own domestic sort of close-knit sort of needs. But there's also other companies that have come up here and got licenses, and they're trucking the water off the mountain, namely is Coca-Cola. And so they're mining water up here on a commercial basis, trucking it off. Trucks are going up and down our mountain all day and sometimes into the night, and taking it down to their processing place to bottle it as spring water.
Yeah. And you were saying that there was, in particular, people are finding that their water bores, some people are finding that their personal water bores are drying up.
Yeah, look, I have spoken to a couple of people who have anecdotally have told me that, you know, they've been up on the mountain for 20, 30 years, maybe even more, and have always had a working bore and now don't. And they're just down the road from these places where their commercial bores are.
Yeah, that's terrible.
I know.
I mean, how can that be that, you know, they're not connected to, like, city council water? So what are they supposed to do? Like, that's
I know
that's
and
terrible.
The community is fighting it. At the moment, there has been a moratorium. The water minister has said, right, no more commercial water licenses for the next 12 months, and QUT have got scientists actually studying the water table for Tambourine Mountain and Springbrook, and looking at the groundwater systems to see what impact that also might be having, because we need to be worrying about our rainforest too and their dependence on this groundwater.
Yeah. And then you were telling me something about, because Tambourine Mountain is only like a small area, but they're like, because I suppose it's so popular, that are they overdeveloping the area as well?
There is a risk, and we're always a bit nervous about overdevelopment. We all came up to the mountain for the beauty of it and the sort of semi-rural lifestyle and the national parks. But yet there is this constant battle with having to sort of repel unsympathetic developments.
Right, okay. And what's out in these sorts of areas, what's healthcare like? I mean, what's aged care like? You know, out in Wright, what are services like
Look,
that?
End of last year, I took on a regional vaccinator nurse position. So I was actually travelling around a lot around Wright and going to a lot of aged care facilities. And then that is a concern I have is on ratios to do with looking after our elderly. But that's probably relevant to all of Australia. We don't have ratios in our nursing home for nurse or carers to the people that they're looking after.
Yeah, I'd read that they don't have the ability to have registered nurses like 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, especially in rural and regional areas. Yeah, which is pretty, that's pretty difficult to look after people properly, isn't
Well,
it?
it is. It's
Like,
a real safety thing because I think for every shift you should have a registered nurse on board, overseeing everything that's going on in the nursing home. Yeah.
yeah. Can you tell us like a bit about the Scenic Rim? Like, what does that encompass and what does Wright
Yeah,
encompass?
right. It's really interesting, actually. There's this huge agricultural area. So that includes the Scenic Rim and the Lockyer Valley. It goes all the way up just short of up to Toowoomba, but not including Toowoomba and the Warrego Highway area. And of course, going out towards the New South Wales border, towards Grantham and Helidon. But interesting enough, it also incorporates parts of more suburban areas like Greenbank, Logan Village. Yarrabilba, Jimboomba, which are all really population developing areas right now, and see that's even a separate thing to be concerned about is a lot of new developments going in, and yet they're going in without the infrastructure around them to support them. So you'll have new estates, but then to leave them, they're channeling onto the usual, two lane road that's always been there.
Yeah, we've heard this one before, haven't we, Tim?
Yeah.
Like, we've done a few interviews with other people who have said this too, that they build these developments and, for housing, because we definitely need
Yeah.
housing for other people, but they don't build the roads and the infrastructure to go with it. So,
Yeah.
I mean, this is what they're doing, hey? Because, people desperately need housing, but, you can't just put all this housing in these, regional areas
Yep.
and then not also have jobs for these people and roads for the people to get to jobs and schools and, care facilities and hospitals and all the rest of the stuff that people need. You can't just build a whole bunch of houses out in the middle of
Yeah,
nowhere and say, there you go,
absolutely.
and those areas like Yarrabilba that are experiencing a lot of growth, like it kind of feels like they're already like the local infrastructure is already at capacity, and yet there's thousands of new homes that are yet to be built in that area, and so you just wonder like we're already kind of like struggling with traffic congestion and just the ability to move around, and now how much worse is it going to get? And then what's going to have to be done to alleviate that? It's yeah, the lack of planning is quite mind-blowing, actually.
Well, it
Yeah.
actually makes me feel absolutely protective of Scenic Rim Lockyer Valley, which is this huge agricultural area which we need because it's a full food bowl area. And what concerns me actually is fragmentation of agricultural land, that maybe they might start dividing these bigger blocks up for new housing developments. And I just think that area
Right.
really needs to be protected for many reasons, not just agriculture, but also agri-tourism, which is a huge, well, I mean, the agriculture and the agribusiness together, tourism, sorry, just for Scenic Rim is $400 million of regional gross product every year. So definitely worth protecting.
What do they, what kind of, like, is it cattle or like, what do they have?
Oh, it's a,
there?
It's
what
a real of... mix of everything you can imagine with agriculture. A lot of, say, towards Kalbar, a lot of vegetable growing. It's a real hub for
right.
vegetable growing. But also tourism in agriculture is really growing. So people are having Airbnbs on their farm properties. So just diversifying.
Mm. Oh, do they?
Yeah, diversifying a bit. But also we've got this real sort of, you know, paddock to plate tourism that we're trying to promote, where you're out in the countryside and, you know, where what you see growing is then what you're later going to eat at the local cafe or restaurant.
Oh, that's heaps better, isn't
yeah.
it? The other thing that would be good is like solar farms, you know. I've seen them, you know, I've seen pictures of them. But, you know, that would be great if you could do like heaps of solar farms and people, you know, I don't know. That would be good as well. Yeah, okay. And I've seen this thing about like some sort of flying fox management that they've got to have out in the scenic rim. Is there some sort of problem with flying foxes out there? I don't know. I've got this image of just like a heap of flying foxes.
Like, a massive cave with them.
Yeah, like is there some problem?
Look, I'm not personally aware, but I do know with flying foxes, if they decide to latch onto a particular type of particular area of forest, my goodness, that's where they stay and they're really hard to move on.
Right. I think they're protected as well, aren't they? So
there's, yeah.
Like it must be really hard to get rid of them. Maybe that's why it's some sort of, it's an issue for the scenic rim. Okay. And what about climate change? Like I know that like when you go to sort of maybe regional and rural areas, there's maybe a divide between whether they believe in climate change, whether they want to do anything about climate change. Like what's your experience around Wright and...
Yep, that's definitely evolving. I was out at Peak Crossing the other day meeting with a farmer and we were just talking. He's had a wealth of experience and he is very concerned about climate change and also introducing more sustainable, environmentally friendly ways of farming.
Oh, okay. Mm. Oh, there you go.
So do you feel, excellent. Nicole, like that there is a bit more of a greener movement? Like are things changing? And I know that this is the first time that you're a candidate for Wright, but how have you felt from when you started, you know, talking to the community about these issues to now?
Look, I have to say there still are people that are probably quite traditional. In the way it's always been done and then we will continue on this way. And that's okay. It's more for me, I feel, as a government needs to support these farmers to move forward. You can't just expect people, hey, be more environmentally friendly. No, they need to be supported with education, grants, so they can change things. And also I think communities need to be included in on this. So it's like a group effort. So if everybody's having to alter the way they've always done things and they're doing it together, I think a more supportive environment would be a better way of going about it.
Mm. Yeah. So what's the best way to get messages to the community? Like, do you have community sort of town hall meetings or, I mean, I know maybe they read, do they read newspapers a lot more out that way? Or like?
Yeah, definitely. The newspapers, I feel, do support, you know, looking at a more sustainable way of farming. And I know journalists are keen to meet farmers that are doing that. But, you know, it really does need government support because if you can imagine, it would be a huge mammoth thing to change the way that you farm.
Because it's handed down through generations, isn't it? How to run the farm.
Also, things need to be fixed. Like there's soil degradation and soil quality and water quality, and that's massive. And, you know, people are going to obviously need grants and assistance to regenerate with growing more native trees. Like the farmer I met the other day out at Peak Crossing, he's actually planted 500 native trees on his property. So people are trying.
Yeah. And what's it like with, in terms of like connections and you know, internet connection and things like that? Like what's it like around Wright and the scenic rim?
Look, it is patchy. Sometimes it's really good and then in other areas it's not. You do tend to have to be with Telstra in some areas. So you won't, if you're not, you just won't have reception.
Well, that's pretty bad because, you know, for a business to do really well these days, I mean, you need to be connected to the internet.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Yeah. Yeah.
That needs to change.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, if everybody was connected to the internet, I mean, Tim and I have been talking about this on previous episodes, that, I mean, you could do any business from anywhere, right, Tim? That's what you've been telling me.
Borderless.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, remote. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that's right. I think that sense of like, patchiness of connection, especially just as you're driving and you've got reception and suddenly you don't. I realized the kind of technical challenge to connect communities because our country is so big. And actually Wright itself, just looking at the map, if you have a look at the, I was just looking at the division map of Wright, is huge, like the actual physical area. At this day and age, like there's kind of like no excuse, like we really need better connectivity.
I was actually at Park Ridge, which is obviously more of the suburban area of Wright, at a Business Connect meeting the other day. It was a breakfast meeting with local business people from the Park Ridge area. And one of the complaints they had there was patchy internet. So I was thinking, this is just part of Brisbane. What chance do people out in rural areas have?
Well, that's terrible, because there's a lot of like news and social media information. Social media is not all bad. There's a lot of information there that everybody needs to have access to, you know. They're really missing out.
Yeah. And on that point, just about, I guess, the vastness of Wright, how do you, because you're campaigning at the moment for the Greens in the elections, not far away now, May 21. Actually, it's less than a month away now.
Yep.
But how do you get around the division, since it is so large? Or like where do you kind of try to focus? Or, how do you kind of manage the area that you've got?
Look, when I was chosen as a candidate last year, I knew that I needed to get to know my electorate a lot more. I mean, I obviously know around where I live, Tambourine Mountain, Scenic Rim, but I needed to branch out more. So that's why I got the regional vaccinator nurse job. So it was with a team of nurses going around vaccinating for COVID-19. So it was brilliant. I got to go out to Gatton University and hear about what was going on out there and different types of agricultural research, lots of aged care facilities. I've been to Calbar, where there's the CalFresh Centre, where they're packaging up all the vegetables. But to be honest, that was great to get me out more regional and rural. I've joined a lot of Facebook pages for all the different areas of Wright, and I try and be on them most days to see, what's happening, what's concerning people. And that's kept me in touch too. But look, honestly, at the moment, I felt so strongly about being the candidate that I actually haven't gone back to my nursing job this year. So this is my full-time job. As I said, I was out at Park Ridge a couple of days ago. In a couple of days' time, I'm heading out for the Lockyer Valley, because I want to make more connection also with the people out that way. I've been driving a lot around Scenic Rim, which is also lovely because some of these people who are, say, Green supporters, they feel a little bit isolated in these areas that are a little bit more conservative. Yeah. So I've actually been joining them up. They're making friend connections. So,
That's nice.
It's actually been really good.
Yeah. And, I mean, I know, like years ago, I think it was the 2011 floods, like Grantham and Lockyer Valley were really terribly affected by the floods. Were they badly affected this time?
Yeah, they were. They were. My partner and I, we went out to, we went up to Laidley, which is part of Wright, and they had a centre there that was helping to allocate people out to go to people's homes to help them. So we went out west of Laidley. I don't even know where I was, sorry. But helping a family who, the beautiful Queenslander had just been absolutely inundated and it was just covered in mud inside. So we spent a few days out there helping them get their property back in order. But no, I was very much aware because I was on a Lockyer Valley clean-up Facebook page, just keeping an eye on what was going on. And it was Lockyer Valley, it was Grantham, it was out there lately. And people are still recovering. Like,
that's terrible.
People with farms that they lost their fences. So fortunately there's volunteers going out there to help them put the fences back up.
Oh, that's no good. So how are they going with, you know, in terms of, I don't know how to phrase this, but in terms of sort of mental health help and things like that, you know, are they able to access, you know, psychology assistance and things like that, you know?
Look, I think actually it's tough for everyone in Australia. I think with what happened with the pandemic, a lot of people have been suffering with mental health issues. Fortunately, when we do have good reception, we're able to connect with psychologists and counsellors via Zoom, which I think has been a great benefit. I've actually got a friend.
If they have internet.
Yes. So, I mean, I have a really good friend who's a psychologist and she does perinatal counselling. So she actually makes contact with new mums and dads regionally who are really isolated. They may not even be near a town at all. So at least, there's that ability to be able to, you know, get some help over the internet.
Help. Okay, that's good. Okay. And what about, you know, this is kind of a personal thing for me to investigate, but how is domestic violence rural and regionally? In your opinion?
In my opinion.
As a registered nurse, midwife, you get to know these things.
Yeah, you do. Look, I can only speak from my experience, and for 12 years I worked at Gold Coast University Hospital. I was on the casual pool, so quite often I'd be seconded to ED, and I can tell you I've never worked a shift in ED without at least one woman being brought in from suffering from domestic violence, at least one. Yeah, and I go there erratically. So it's a huge problem in Australia,
So even rural, regional areas as well?
Absolutely. And if anything, they're even going to have less chance of getting specific help. I mean, if you're living remotely, where are you going to go?
Yeah.
You know, you don't even probably want to go to your local town because you're known there and then maybe people are not supportive of your situation. I mean, I can see a lot of people regionally just actually being stuck in their situation because they've got nowhere else to go.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So I guess it kind of brings us to your three big things. What do you feel are your three big things, I suppose, for, you know, building back better in rural and regional areas? You know, I suppose concentrating on Wright and the Scenic Rim, which is where you are. You know, now that we're moving through coronavirus and you know, we've got the election at hand. What do you feel is that we need?
Look, I can't help but cover it from a nursing point of view and just with my experience and caring for people and particularly vulnerable people. Ratios in healthcare facilities is very important to me. I know as registered nurses in hospitals, we've now got a ratio of 1 to 4 patients. For midwives, they say it's 1 to 4, but it's actually not, because quite often if you're a midwife and you're in the postnatal ward and you've got 4 women, chances are you've got 4 babies also. So you're actually, it's a 1 to 8. So yes. I really resent that, because it's as if the babies are of no work. Of course they're of work. You've got vulnerable babies that are dropping their temperatures or are not attaching and needing assistance with breastfeeding. Sometimes they've been exposed to an infection, so they need to have observations taken regularly. So, yes, they require work too.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'd need some sort of way of, I suppose, having, you know, nurses and midwives you know, an incentive to get them to work regional, rural areas? I don't know. Somehow we need to maybe once they build the housing developments out in rural regional areas, then we need the infrastructure out there so that we would have the jobs out there and the ratios out there.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
There just isn't the planning, I think, involved.
Look, it's a state. Well, it's a nationwide problem, but in Queensland, I think we're 2,000 midwives short. So
right,
you know, regionally and rurally, it's just going to be even more difficult, isn't it? With a less population.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean that point about just being short-staffed and people, you know, nurses being stretched is.
Yeah.
Such a recurring theme. I wonder, is the solution to that? Yeah, I mean, certainly planning, but is there also like how much is funding the problem? Like if there was an increase of funding, are there also kind of other issues down the line that don't get immediately fixed with more money?
Look, I'd have to say from my point of view, I actually worked as a registered nurse and a midwife. But I also had another life as I ran a electrical contracting company. And so I had contact with, you know, engineers and, you know, other people who were involved in the construction industry. And I became quite jealous of how much people were paid in the construction industry. And I thought, why am I like working doing these jobs as a nurse and a midwife when people in construction get paid so much more than me? And yet I've done 2 masters and got 20 years experience, and the jobs that I have to do are life and death decisions for people. And people in construction have done like a trade and they get paid so much more money than me, and they get height allowance, sight allowance, inclement weather allowance, boot allowance, you know, and once they get a drop of rain on their shirt, they go home, they'll go to the pub, you know, and they get a new car 100% written off tax free. And they, you know, and I'm like, why am I doing this job? I could just continue in my, you know, construction job and get paid double the money, you know? And I'm thinking, why am I doing this? Like,
yeah.
It was just, why do nurses and midwives do that job? It is no good, and you don't get paid very much money. It's terrible. Like, you only do it because you care about the people.
Absolutely.
You don't get paid for what you do.
But don't you feel honestly, like in all the care industries, you're taking advantage of people that are well-intentioned, and it's the aged care workers.
You are exploited.
Workers. Yeah, it's the nurses. It's the
You are exploited. And then they say to you, can you stay back because Mrs. Jones is just about to have her baby and, you know, you've been with her all shift and, you know, there's nobody else to cover you. And you go, oh, I do care about her. Okay. I'll miss my child's birthday party, you know, or they'll go, oh, there's nobody else to have a tea break now and none of this paperwork has been done. Can you get all this paperwork done instead of going to lunch? And you go, okay. And you find out for a whole year, you've never had a lunch break. And you go, I have never had a lunch break. I have never eaten away from my desk. I have never not stayed back after work for half an hour, ever.
Yep.
And I have never been paid anywhere near what the local construction worker has got. And yet they pack up an hour before it's knock-off time. They've packed up all their tools and they stand there going, tick, 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 right, knock-off time, let's go. You go, what the hell?
Yeah.
And yet the union says, oh, no, you must claim for every minute of overtime. You go, that's not going to happen, because you go to your boss and they go, we don't pay overtime here.
Yeah.
You just get your job done.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Put back on you, but, you know, better with time management.
You should have worked harder.
Yeah.
You should have just worked harder. Work harder, work harder. And they crack the whip. And you say, oh, we've got 5 people away today. Too bad, work harder. Yeah, it's terrible. It is the most terrible job. But everybody should be nurses, please, because we need them.
So with that, Get into the industry. Yeah.
Yeah. Please be a nurse. We need you. We love you. But honestly, once you get there, you will find out. And then they ration all of the resources and say, oh, you can only use like 2 gloves for this shift because we don't have enough gloves. Like, they ration everything. Mm. Yeah. Because there's not enough resources, not enough staff, not enough this. They don't replace anybody who's off sick. They just tell you, work harder, work faster. Mm. You have 10 minutes with this person and that's it. Don't make a mistake. If you make a mistake, we'll take you to prison. You'll lose your license. Mm. You will never work again. It's terrible. Anyway, I've just taken over the podcast. But we have to have a laugh. Nurses have to laugh about this stuff, otherwise we'll cry. So, second point. What's your next big thing, Nicole?
Oh, look, it's definitely going back to what we've already discussed with the mental health. That's
We need help. Please help us.
Yep.
We need mental health care.
Yeah. I mean, if we could bring mental health into Medicare, that would be brilliant. It's part of our body, the mind. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do need help. And your third big thing?
Look, I think there should be more respect. And I think that feeds from the top down. So, yes, in government, we need an ICAT. We need a code of conduct for our ministers, and that should feed down. But we also need some programs for kids about respectful relationships. So they know what normal interacting with people is, and that, you know, domestic violence situations are not normal, even though they might be seeing that at home.
Yeah. Yeah, that might help. I mean, anything could help. They started that... what was that milkshake?
That was awful. That was cringeworthy.
It was. I mean, at least they tried. They tried something about consent, you know, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't any good. But, you know, there's something starting to sort of talk about consent. And actually, my kids, I had a discussion about consent with them. They understood it more than I did because I'm a hugger. You know, and so I naturally like hug people, but I didn't realize that you have to ask consent about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, they sort of said, oh no, we don't hug people. You have to ask people if you can do that. And I was like, oh really? Wow. I didn't know that. So
I've altered it too, because once upon a time you had friends and they've got little kids, you go and you grab them and you hug them. And it's like, sometimes you actually can see that they're sort of like cringing a little bit. They're just sort of tolerating it for that moment.
Yes.
It's like, we all need cultural change. It's like,
I've now
started to back off and just watch what they want or not. You know, like I don't necessarily go in for a hug now. I just stay my distance and say hi, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I thought... like, it's my culture, like, I'm Fijian, and it's my culture that you actually kiss each other, you know, when, like, you get introduced to someone.
Yeah.
Like, I would go to a family thing, they'd say, oh, this is Peter, and you go, hello, Peter, and you got to give him a kiss. And, like, so my culture, like, on the cheek, not on the lips,
thank goodness. Passion,
but it's no tongue. But you go and you give, like, and they'd be like, oh, this is your second cousin. You go, oh, wow, hi. You know, but you have to kiss them on the cheek. Like, everybody, you have to kiss them on the cheek. And now it's like, oh, wow, I don't, okay. So now I have to, like, stand there and just go, hello.
Like, and wave, maybe.
Like, hi. But I'm so used to, like, this is the way I was brought up.
Yeah.
You have to go and kiss that person now.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, it's so different. But anyway, yeah, teaching children, you know, consent and respectful relationships, I think, is the way to go.
Yeah. And that they should be able to have autonomy over their body. If they don't want to be kissed by Uncle Blah Blah or Auntie, you know, yeah.
It was great talking to you, Nicole.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Nicole.
We always have a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And good to talk to you too, Tim.
Yeah, likewise.
We'll we'll invite you to Greenbank Markets next time. Yeah. You can hang out.
Feeling left out.
Yes. hang out with the nurses. We'll tell you some gory stories and stuff. You've been listening to Beyond the Rona. Captioned audio is available on our YouTube channel, or you can visit beyondtherona.com to see previous episodes or to keep in touch. We'll catch you next time.